Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. A very full show this morning. In about 7 minutes, we'll meet a composer whose concerto for adaptive saxophone will receive its world premiere in Kearney this weekend. Later, a 1938 radio broadcast inspired a production being staged by Grand Island Little Theater, and author Tosca Lee has released a thriller set in the Midwest. She'll be here this morning. All that and much more ahead today. You can hear the show online this morning. Stream NET Radio at netnebraska.org or listen to Friday Live using the NET Nebraska mobile app. We'll start this morning's show with two Nebraska writers. This Thursday, Marge Sizer and Karen Shoemaker will be at Francie and Finch in Lincoln from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Karen Gettert Shoemaker is the author of the novel The Meaning of Names and the collection Night Sounds and Other Stories. You may recognize the name of her novel from 2016's One Book, One Nebraska as well. Marge Sizer was featured by NET in a series of readings on our weekly Friday Live Extra podcast, as well as on this program. She's the author of 6 collections of poetry, a brand new book coming out,
yes,
titled Learning to Swim, and she just received the 2019 Nebraska Book Award for Poetry for The Woman in the Moon. Marge and Karen, it's great to have you both on the show.
Thank you for inviting us.
And Marge, congrats on the award. When did you find out?
A couple of weeks ago, and I was so excited about that.
Well, it's wonderful. So nice to be honored. How did it happen that both of you would be on this reading together this Thursday? Did Francie and Finch reach out, or did you guys come up with this?
Well, I think Marge probably arranged this, but Marge and I are in a writer's group together. We've been in a writer's group for 27 years, so
yeah.
I've been very fortunate to be in her presence while all this great work is coming to be.
Longtime friends.
Yes.
And Karen, you are also a mentor with UNO's MFA writing program and founder of Larksong Writer's Place. Can you talk a little bit about what Larksong is and what you do with that?
Well, Larksong is, I'm going to quote Ava DuVernay, the director, who talks about dreams. There's two kinds of dreams, the kind that you that give you something to hope for and the kind that turn into plans. And Larksong is both. I've been working at without a location for years. I've been doing Right on the River, which is a retreat space down on River Inn in Brownville, mm-hmm, and writers from the Midwest area, so Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas, and Nebraska come into these spaces. And so I've been working on that for several years, and I also do mentoring individually. So it's all under the umbrella of Larksong, which is which I hope to turn into a place. It's becoming a place with an address soon.
Ah,
so
okay.
Well, I'll come back and tell more on that when I
sure,
get
yeah,
started,
sounds good. So. I look forward to hearing more about that. And you have something coming up in February in Walton as well.
Yes, that's one of the on-the-road kind of workshops that I do, which I just finished one that was supposed to be at the River Inn, but the Missouri is flooded, so we ended up at my house and it became Right on Pine Lake instead of Right on the River. But the one in February is Right on the Prairie at the Prairie Creek Inn Bed and Breakfast, and it will be both a day, people can come for the day or they can come overnight, and it's I'm going to be with Twyla Hansen. We're going to be running a workshop together.
And I'll note that when people look for links on the Friday Live page and link through to more information, they'll also notice that in September you're going to Greece as well to do some special writing activities.
Yes, I got very lucky. I know people who say my name at the right time, and Paul Baker, who runs the writing series at Gratitude Cafe, mentioned me to Dorothy Ramsey, who put Write in Greece together and invited me to be the instructor. So we're all going to Greece. Everyone's invited. Come to Greece.
Sounds like it would be a great source for inspiration.
Yes.
Have you both brought poems to read for us this morning?
Yes.
Well, who would like to go first and tell us a little bit about what you're going to read for us?
Well, I'll read... my new book is Learning to Swim, but this is not for my new book, but it's watery anyway.
Perfect. That sounds fine. Well, yes.
This is a love poem called The Print the Whales Make. You know, when the whale dives for a minute, there's a big circle on the water. The print the whales make. You and I on the boat notice the track the whales leave, the huge ring their diving draws for a time on the surface. I want to believe when we can no longer walk across a room for a hug, can no longer step into the arms of the other, there will be this, some delicate trace that stays. And below, out of sight, dark mammoth shadow, flick of flipper, body of delight, diving deep.
I have to say, in hosting a live show, there's always this danger that tears are going to come into my eyes. And I think that poem is one of them, Marge.
I'm glad you like that. My new book has poems and prose.
Oh, that's great. Well, Karen, I know you probably also brought something this morning to read for us. I would love to hear it.
Write some poetry, but you can tell by my publishing history that it's that I'm not really a poet, but I hang around with poets. So I do write some poetry. Sometimes emotion insists on finding words,
yeah.
And so this poem comes out of an experience where it just insisted on explaining itself to me. The title of it is On Becoming Something of Inexplicable Value. There's a moment in the evening, in the winter, when the sun settles down in the notch between the trees and lights a path across the water between here and somewhere else. A moment when all around the houses gather themselves to themselves in a semicircle of expectant darkness. When every living thing breathes in the last sense of this particular day, breathes out pinpoints of light and luminescence. A moment when we are reminded the ground beneath our feet is a spinning ball flinging us forward into darkness. A moment when we press ourselves against the skin of now like lips of a newborn to a mother's swollen breast.
Karen, thank you so much. I always love how poetry makes you either look really, really small at something or really, really big, like the long view at something. But it's always, you know, you pick that particular thing and you create those images. It's really great. Writers sometimes have favorite spaces in which to work, or times of days, favorite pens even. Do either of you have any particular habits or sources of inspiration?
I like to write early. And wrap up in a quilt on the couch. But in the day, then, find a coffee shop.
That sounds good. What about for you, Karen?
I'm a morning writer also. I wake up and get my first cup of coffee and start writing in a journal. And I love a fountain pen. I'm pretty smitten with a Cross fountain pen that I've had for years. And I write for about an hour almost every single morning. But then when I work, which is what writing books is the work I do, then I will go to my desk or to my office and sometimes a couch, sometimes a coffee place. It's not the place so much as just I dedicate the time to working on my fiction. I don't wait for
right.
a muse. I get there in space, in the place where the muse can be there, and I
yeah.
learn that kind of thing.
The muse
from
is
Mark.
Looking for yeah. someone with a pen or a keyboard.
Yes, exactly.
right. Now, while you're both at Francie and Finch, you'll read and be there for book signings. Are there poets that each of you have admired or been influenced by in the past, particular favorites that you can think of?
W.S. Merwin and Mark Doty and Sharon Olds, Alan Bass.
Linda Paston, I would add to that list, and I would add Marge's name and Twyla and Twyla Hansen, because we're in a writer's group together, so I get to see the process of it. Another favorite is Mary Oliver. I love to memorize her poems and say them over and over again. So,
well, I've been talking here with Karen Shoemaker and Marge Sizer. Both of them will be at Francie and Finch this coming Thursday at 6 p.m. Karen and Marge, great having you on the show this morning, and thanks again for your poetry.
Fun to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Friday Live on NET Radio and netnebraska.org.
There is much more ahead on Friday Live. I'm Robert Goldberg, and I'm here for just a minute to tell you how important you are to NET Radio and to Friday Live. We're not doing heavy fundraising this hour, just reminding you that we still need your help to pay for programming.
Hi, I'm Linda Stephen from Lincoln, Nebraska. I love Friday Live because, well, I get to hear about events that are happening across the state and in Lincoln, and it, you know, helps me fill up my calendar. Or even if I can't go to the exact event, then I hear about an art center that, you know, perhaps I want to go to at a future time, or an art exhibit. So maybe I can't make it this weekend, but it's on my places to explore. and I keep learning about things through, yeah, Friday Live. And I love the live performances that they have on. Sometimes they have an actor or someone presenting a musical and they have them sing live on the radio. It's just so much fun. And, well, and the host, Genevieve, she is so wonderful. It helps people to share about their event and their art.
Linda Steffen is just one of many Nebraska artists whose work has been in the spotlight on Friday Live. When you become a sustaining member of NET Radio, you become a behind-the-scenes star. With a pledge of just $5 a month in support of programming, you'll feel great again, knowing that every time you hear something new on NET, you're a part of making that happen. Here is that number to call with your pledge of $5 a month. It's 800-290-6850, or make your sustaining gift online at netnebraska.org. You can also choose a thank you gift if you'd like, our way of saying thanks for being a part of our backstage crew. Become an NET sustaining star. Set up an ongoing monthly gift of $5 now at 800-290-6850 or online netnebraska.org. And thanks.
Thanks for listening to Friday Live, coming to you from the Mill in Lincoln's historic Haymarket District. My next guests are David Knapp from the University of Nebraska Kearney, as well as Dr. Allison Gaines, who leads the Kearney Symphony Orchestra, and Robert Gross, the composer whose saxophone concerto will receive its world premiere on the opening concert for Kearney Symphony Orchestra's season. It's also the first concerto written for a saxophonist who plays an adaptive instrument. Dr. Knapp worked with Kearney native Jeff Stelling to create a saxophone he could play with just his right hand. He has been on the show before, so we got to hear a little sampling of how this saxophone works on a previous show. David, Robert, and Allison, I'm looking forward to learning more about this concert. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I know you guys made a chilly trip from Kearney, so we really appreciate you being here at the Mill. David, you were on our show in Crete, which I referenced here a couple years ago. Years ago, you had this instrument made after a catastrophic stroke made it impossible for you to use your left hand to play anymore. So now you have this concerto written inspired by this instrument. How did that happen? What was the seed of that piece?
Oh, it's just such a thrill to have this opportunity. Music is just so important to my life and so many people with disabilities. Robert and I met just over a year ago, and we happened to be presenting at the same conference in England, and Robert asked if I'd be interested in collaborating, and I said sure. You know, and people often ask us those things in the arts, and then you never hear back. And then 3 weeks later, he sent me a three-movement sonata.
Wow.
In the email. And then 2 weeks after that, the first draft of the concerto came in my email. It's just been wonderful.
So, Robert, how did you go about writing this piece? How did you approach it?
Well, I had missed David's presentation at the conference, and I was kicking myself. So the night that I was in my hotel room, I saw David Knapp. He plays with one hand, and I was, like, intrigued by that. And I went and saw his TED Talk on YouTube, and I was so impressed. I mean, he was, like, the best saxophonist I had ever heard in my life. So I was like, I've got to get to know this guy, and I've got to write something for him. So I want to emphasize, though, that this is not a piece specifically for a saxophone with one hand in mind. It's a saxophone concerto that David happens to be playing on an instrument with one hand, but it could be approached by a saxophonist with two hands, and it is as challenging a piece for any saxophonist in the world, really. I mean, David told me, write a real concerto for him. We want to make a point about the equality of the adapted instrument, and that's what we're doing.
Right. So in my mind, I'm kind of thinking about this like driving a car. You could drive a manual or you could drive an automatic. They both drive, though. Right?
So, that's a great analogy.
So Either saxophone, you could work this out with. Robert, tell me just a little bit about yourself and your background. I know we were chatting before the show about your studies.
Well, I got my doctorate in music composition from University of Southern California, but I decided to go back to school. I'm actually a graduate student now, again, once again, at the University of Texas Woman's University, and I'm studying to become a music therapist, and I'm I'm going to graduate in December, knock wood, and become a music therapist hyphen composer hyphenate.
So. Lots of hyphens there.
Yeah.
What pulls you into that particular field of study or niche in music?
Well, I had always been interested in working with people with disabilities. I was part of a electronic music duo called Blind Labyrinth, where I worked with a partner who was both blind and had an auditory disorder as well. And it's just something that has always attracted me. And I am also disabled myself as somebody who has chronic depression. So I understand it, and it's just something that has always driven me to work with people of all kinds of different abilities.
Okay, sounds good. Now, Allison, the premiere of this concerto is part of the Kearney Symphony Orchestra's season opener, which is titled Scary Tales. So also on that concert, Peter and the Wolf, which is the tales part of that title, right? You want to tell us a little bit about what else is on the concert and who other your other guests are?
Well, when I was programming the concert, we already had this sax concerto lined up. That was actually the first thing that I knew we were going to play on our opening season, because I'd never done a premiere, I'm ashamed to say. And so that made me really excited. And then I started to, it got the ball rolling in my mind of, how big can I make this? And I remember asking David, would you mind sort of sharing the spotlight with some other soloists? And he said, no, the more people are interested, the more we can do, the better. So we're opening with Night on Bald Mountain, something to showcase the orchestra, and that's a little Halloween themed as well. If we do it right, children may run screaming from the theater, and that will be excellent. Then the Reynolds Chair of Creative Writing at UNK, Brad Maudlin, a multi published author, wonderful guy. He's going to narrate Peter and the Wolf. And that's going to be great, unless you're the duck, and then it's not so great for you.
Right.
Then, after intermission, to keep the spooky line going, we've got our wonderful mezzo-soprano, Sharon Campbell, is going to sing a sort of witchy aria from Verdi's Il Trovatore about relatives who got burned at the stake.
Excellent.
And then I know a lot of people find new music scary, mm-hmm. but we're hoping they won't. So
right.
We're closing with the sax concerto.
Right.
And we also have Brad Maudlin helped us arrange Sarah Miner to come out from the Cleveland Art Institute. She's a poet and artist, and we're going to have an art installation that is a Baba Yaga hut, the Eastern European witch. It's going to be hanging from the ceiling. It's about 13 feet long, and people can walk through this thing in the lobby at the intermission and afterwards at the reception.
Oh my goodness. You guys have pulled together a really spectacular opening concert.
Yes.
You're setting the bar high for the start of this season, Allison.
I know. Maybe it might be too much. Ask me Wednesday morning.
Okay. And how would you describe the character of this concerto? What can people look forward to here?
The concerto is a fabulous piece that is extremely well constructed from a purely musical standpoint, and it's loaded with lots of fireworks and car chases and excitement for the audience, and it's very approachable, I think, as a listener, and for the performers in the orchestra as well. So we've been enjoying working on it, and I know the orchestra members have individually been putting in a lot of individual practice on their parts, we're hoping. No, they certainly have been. And it's captured everyone's imagination. A gentleman in my city, Kearney, Jeff Stelling, is a world-class instrument builder and repair person, and he became fascinated with the problem of developing a saxophone for one hand that was capable of everything a two-handed instrument could do.
Yeah.
And at first I thought it was simply impossible, but given, you know, a few years of work building it and then many years of practicing it, it's becoming apparent that this instrument is simply revolutionary and stunning to most people. And
yeah.
we've had inquiries and interest from around the world, people wondering how we did this and how can they do it, and they would like to try the same thing. And so that's been gratifying to me to know that this personal tragedy has has resulted in some positive outcomes.
And that makes me wonder about the life of the concerto after this premiere as well, if you plan on taking this other places, because I know that you work with other organizations and that you travel to present or have people travel to you to show them how this instrument works.
Certainly. We'll have to see, you know, how things develop.
Okay,
and,
sounds good.
I have
good.
A lot of projects with all this new music sitting on my music stand at home. I have a lot of work ahead of me.
Lots of work ahead. Well, we've been talking here this morning with Dr. Allison Gaines. She is the director for Kearney Symphony Orchestra. David Nabb is professor of music at the University of Nebraska-Kearney, and he is the soloist who will give the world premiere of composer Robert Gross's new concerto for saxophone. That premiere is part of the opening concert season for the season for Kearney Symphony Orchestra. The performance is Tuesday, October 15th at 7:30 p.m. and that is in the UNK Fine Arts Building Recital Hall on campus there. Allison, Robert, and David, congratulations in advance on this unique concerto performance in Kearney.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Really appreciate it.
And we will get to hear a sample of your work, Robert, here in just a few seconds here on Friday Live. You can link to more about this concert on our website and anything that you hear about here on the show. That web address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just look for the Friday Live page. Genevieve Randall. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. From our arts calendar are ahead yet on our show from the Mill this morning, and in about 12 minutes, a production in Grand Island that's connected to an historic broadcast by Orson Welles. Next, author Tosca Lee has a new book called A Single Light. A Nebraska writer who grew up in Omaha, Lee has lived in Lincoln and Fremont and is a New York Times, IndieBound, and Amazon bestselling author of 10 novels. A Single Light is a sequel to her book, The Line Between, and she'll be touring several Nebraska communities, Blue Hill, Hastings, Neely, Lincoln, and Kearney coming up. Tosca Lee, welcome to Friday Live.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to have you here. So Blue Hill and Hastings are both tomorrow, we should mention.
Yes.
11 a.m. in Blue Hill and 3 p.m. in Hastings. A busy day for you.
That's right. If you're going to go out and do the stuff, do it all at once, right?
Sounds good. Get it all on the calendar.
That's right.
Now, since this is a second book, a follow-up to The Line Between, should people read the first one before they read A Single Light?
You don't have to, but I think it's more fun because it was written that way and you kind of know the characters already because, you know, if you read the first book. So I recommend it if possible.
Now, you were featured on All About Books with host Pat Leach.
Oh, she's so fabulous.
NET.
I love her.
So I do encourage listeners to go check out that episode in the archives, and that's netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. You placed both books in the Midwest, Iowa, Nebraska. Did you choose that that setting because you're familiar with it, or is there something plot-specific that makes the Midwest a good setting?
You know, for me, it was just a chance to place books out here where I live. I haven't had the opportunity to do that in the... I've written a dozen now. They're not... I've got one that's looking for a home still, but I haven't had a chance to really do that. And so for me, it was kind of a homecoming. You know, my mother's a native Nebraskan. I live here. I'm married to a farmer. So it was a chance to really, you know, kind of come home and blow some stuff up and bring a pandemic.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I don't know if people were really like that I did that, but...
Well, I think it's kind of fun, too, to read a book and know that you're reading about that place, but then think about those things happening, so
yeah,
it's almost a combination of sci-fi and reality, I think.
It is. I have friends who write books in Iowa and stuff, and they change the names and they make up names of towns. I didn't do that. So you can really run down the same street as my characters and go to the same places.
When you're writing a thriller, mm-hmm. how do you approach timing?
Oh, well, you know, I've got a very simple rule, and that is skip the boring stuff. So it's got to be fast. It's got to be like constantly go, 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 run for your life. The pacing is what makes a thriller a thriller. So, yeah, got to keep it fast.
Natasha, between your visits to Neely and Lincoln coming up on your schedule, you're going to be in an event in Texas that is a mystery convention. Mm-hmm. Have you done those kinds of things quite a bit?
I have. So I go to Thriller Fest, about every other year or so. That's in New York City. This is BoucherCon. This is the World Mystery Convention. So I will be there along with 1,600 or more of my closest friends. So I always think, you know, these are all people that either love mysteries or write mysteries. That's a lot of people who have a perfect mystery, a perfect murder inside of them all in one location. So it's going to be fun, though. It's going to be great. Yeah,
that's a good point you make, though.
Yeah, scary. I don't know. I'm kind of frightened now that I think about it.
Well, now, one more quick question for you. I don't want to give away something that I found pretty interesting at the end of your All About Books interview. So I'll just say, though, that writing novels was not a childhood dream realized for you necessarily.
No.
But that made me wonder, though, after writing your first book, what was it like navigating the world of publishing, marketing, and all the things that are, you know, other kind of in the writing process?
You know, you just kind of fumble your way through. You know, everybody's new to it the first time they do it. And then even 2, 3, 5, 7, 8, 11 books in, the industry changes every 6 months, so it's always new. You're always just kind of doing your best, and you're always just basically saying to people, hey, read my book, in between disappearing for months at a time to go write one. So,
right. Yeah. Well, Tosca Lee is the author of A Single Light. It is her newest novel, and it is a follow-up to her book, The Line Between. It's a thriller, and she will be making a tour here to talk about the book. She'll be in Blue Hill tomorrow at 11 a.m. at the Public Library, in Hastings tomorrow at 3 p.m., also at the library there in Hastings. And later, she'll be in Neely, Lincoln, and Kearney. And we'll have a link to her website where you can find more. Look for that on the Friday Live page, and I'll give that web address in a moment. Tosca Lee, great having you on Friday Live this morning. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Challenging, informing, and inspiring, this is NET Radio and netnebraska.org. The 2019 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction went to a novel with a timely focus, Our Fragile Environment. This week, All About Books reviewed The Overstory by Richard Powers.
This novel defies the one-sentence summary. It's a sweeping and ambitious 500 pages of novel about trees, or actually people and trees. Powers explores ideas about how trees connect to each other in many ways, how they're ages old and yet can be felled in a day. Most of his ideas about trees apply to people and vice versa.
Find the full review of this daring new novel, The Overstory by Richard Powers, online now at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. I'm joined next here on Friday Live by Robert Goldberg. He is the host of Nebraska Concerts, which broadcasts each Sunday at 1 p.m. So when you can't make it out to a live performance, we bring one to you. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Genevieve. Yes, we like going out to those concerts and recording them and bringing them to everyone on Sunday afternoons. And we have a great show lined up this Sunday. But let me ask, first of all, Genevieve, have you ever had a teacher that changed your life?
Oh, definitely. I won't say their name because I actually use this favorite teacher's last name as a password sometimes.
Really? I'll have to go digging through your biography and
right, there you go.
Break into your life.
So is there a favorite teacher on Nebraska Concerts this week?
There's not only a favorite, but a famous teacher.
Ah.
Beethoven wanted lessons from Haydn.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and he got them. Though Haydn wasn't very keen at first. He had better things to do than teach little upstart teenagers. But Beethoven persisted, and he got those lessons, and the rest is history. He became the second Haydn, you could say.
I'd say the result was pretty good. Well, we'll look forward to hearing Beethoven this week.
Beethoven and Haydn will hear the Diderot String Quartet.
On Nebraska Concerts. All right, that's Sunday at 1 o'clock. Robert, thank you.
Thanks, Genevieve.
Check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. Blue Cat Gallery in Wayne is hosting an exhibit featuring textile artworks by area members of the Studio Art Quilt Associates. Pieces have connections to habitat, the environment, and the natural world. At Chadron State College, a show of crescent moon pottery by artist Wes Galusha is on display in the CSC Memorial Main Art Gallery. And in Omaha tomorrow at Filmstream's Ruth Sokoloff Theater, you can experience the Met live in HD as Yannick Nezet-Sagan conducts Franco Zeffirelli's production of Turandot by Puccini. That starts at 11:45 a.m. tomorrow. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for Humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, presenting the Governor's Lecture in the Humanities. Dwight David Eisenhower II will speak on D-Day plus 75, October 24th, at the Holland Center in Omaha. Details at humanitiesnebraska.org.
I'm Robert Goldberg. This is the NET Radio Membership Drive. We'll get right back to Friday Live in less than 2 minutes. But because listeners provide NET Radio with our most reliable source of income, we need your support. Your generous donation of $7 monthly will ensure that programs like Friday Live or Nebraska Concerts, programs celebrating the arts and humanities in Nebraska, stay right here on NET Radio, a resource across the state for 30 years.
My name is Evan Bartles. I'm an Omaha-based singer-songwriter. People should support Friday Live because they take the time to look at up-and-coming singer-songwriters or people from our local community like myself. They celebrate that, and they support it, and they bring it to a wider audience. They give us a platform to share with people. But, you know, it's not just that. It's Genevieve. She is so great to talk to. She's one of the most kind, warm person. She makes it so easy. Sitting on that at that table up there, and the lights are going, and you're just thinking, oh man, I don't want to say anything dumb. You just get nervous in life. But she just makes everything so easy. And even showing up, the producers, Dave and everybody, people are so nice to you. Everybody here, they really care.
NET cares about the entire state and connects the entire state. When you hear things that resonate with you or about events you're interested in, you may be more likely to follow up, to find out even more about what you heard. Please get involved now by becoming an NET Sustaining Star with just $7 monthly at 800-290-6850. That's 800-290-6850 or netnebraska.org. Thank you.
This is Friday Live on listener-supported NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Ron Jelinek has been working with the Grand Island Little Theater since 1991. He is currently directing The Battle of Shallowford, which opens tonight in Grand Island. Ron, thanks for joining us today to talk about the newest show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us just a little bit about the play first, The Battle of Shallowford.
It sounds like it would be a serious show, but it is actually a really funny comedy that takes place in Shallowford, North Carolina. The date happens to be October 30th, 1938, which happens to be the night they Orson Welles broadcast his War of the Worlds broadcast. The folks that hang out there at the general store in Shallowford hear the broadcast, think it's real, and decide they're going to protect their town against Martians.
Yeah, this is kind of a famous event that happened in 1938 with Orson Welles. Did you or your cast listen to that in preparation or take anything from that for this production?
We do listen to excerpts from it. There was a lot of it played throughout the course of the play, just so people can kind of hear how real it actually did sound, you know. And so it does add a lot to the flavor of the show.
What are some of the challenges that you faced considering how to put this show together?
Just the usual challenges. It required a really strong cast because the cast is comprised of, the characters comprised of a lot of kind of eccentric characters in this little town. And the fun is watching them react to this extraordinary situation.
There's a kind of love interest, I understand, between Lonnie and Ruthie. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those two?
These are the young people in the show. Ruthie is a young girl who lives in Shallowford, but just kind of wonders what else is out there in the world. She's trying to figure out her place in Shallowford or if she even wants to be there. And Lonnie is kind of a square. He reads, science fiction magazines and dreams of the future, and he knows his future is not in Shallowford. And so he talks of leaving and going to the New York World Fair and seeing all the innovations. And in this conversation that he has with Ruthie, they kind of decide, or at least decide that they are interested in one another and that they kind of feel the same way about the future and Shallowford and where they belong.
What does Shallowford think of this Martian invasion that's coming into their town?
Well, most of them just think they can't believe it. It's just so outrageous. Everybody is so geared up because everything they hear in the news is about war in Europe. It's about the Depression era. It's about the stock market crashes and the troubles in Asia. And so all the news that they hear is so fantastic. This is really just one more piece of fantastic news. And what I think is kind of funny, especially in today's society with the social media and everything, is kind of has echoes to me of the fake news that we encounter on social media and how people can react or overreact to something that isn't true at all.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if Orson Welles were alive today, if he would use Twitter or Facebook or something to to scare people.
You kind of wonder. Yeah. Obviously, Welles' intent was simply entertainment, but like I said, they did it so real that it really convinced the masses that actually something was going on.
Now, after the production of Shallowford, do you want to give us a preview of some other shows that are coming to the Grand Island Little Theater season?
We have a Christmas show coming up about the first week of December, which is called The Little House Christmas, which is based on the stories of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Coming up in February of next year, we have a show called Kitchen Witches, which I understand is a comedy about a cooking show. And then the last show of the season is kind of a serious comedy. It's a dramedy that's called This Random World. And I really don't know much about, but I've heard it's a very interesting play.
The Grand Island Little Theater, they are staging The Battle of Shallowford. Opening night is tonight, and the shows run this weekend through Sunday, and again next weekend, October 18th through the 20th. Ron Jelinek is director of the show. Ron, thanks so much for talking with me.
I sure appreciate being here to talk.
To find out more about this show or others here on Friday Live, there are links on the Friday Live page. That address is netnebraska.org/radio. Well, if you haven't been listening to our newest season of the Plain Story podcast, I'm going to suggest that you do. I'm so proud of this project, and we just dropped our latest episode, number 6, last night. Here's a clip from it. I'm talking with Sarah Rowe, an artist and musician, about how important it is for Native Americans to share their voices and art.
It's really empowering to have a voice, even though some of the oldest recordings of Native people were made because they thought that we would be gone. So I think it's important to share our art and our voices.
Like her music, Sarah's voice and her message is calm, but penetrating. Other voices demand our attention in a more pointed and urgent way.
I feel the latent effects of assimilation in a city native raised by bright lights and skyscrapers, born with dim prospects, little peace in living as a child. I headed about the fact I wasn't wild like they called my ancestors. Imagine what it'd be to live nomadic off the land and free. Instead, I was for the peat like a furnace, cause I wasn't furnished with the language and traditional ways of my peeps. Yeah, I used to feel like I wasn't truly indigenous. Now I say me witch, get ye money, do for showing me my true roots. Definitely native, take responsibility for being educated. My people and customs originating from early phases of history. Yes, deeper than fried bread and contest powwows. Tears shed in the sweat lodge. Prayers go out to all those I've wronged and who have wronged me. Gotta
That's a clip of episode 6 of the Plain Story podcast, and you heard artist Tall Paul rapping there at the end. Check out the podcast at plainstorypodcast.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. Coming up in about 8 minutes here on Friday Live, we'll meet cast of Nebraska Repertory Theater's newest production. Next, The Bay, which has fused skating art and community for years here in Lincoln, is presenting the Skate Art Music Festival tomorrow. The event is free and filled with lots of activities, visual arts, and live music. And joining me are skate park director Matthew Ratliff and marketing manager Lauren Ferris. Thanks for being here this morning.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Good morning.
Have you. This is the 5th year for this festival, so first of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It's always a milestone, those things divisible by 5, right?
Absolutely.
What's the kind of overview of the festival?
Sure. You want me to go ahead and...
Hit it.
Great. So this is an event that, like you mentioned, we have every year. And basically what it is just a celebration of the subcultures that the Bay focuses on, which is music, skateboarding, and art. We work a lot with the community and with youth. And so this is kind of our capstone event to really open up to the community and allow everyone a chance to come in and see what we do and experience what we experience on a daily basis and just have a good time.
And I understand there's a connection with the Ryan Scheckler Foundation. Can you talk about what they do and who they are?
Yeah, so this year actually, so we applied for a grant through the Scheckler Foundation, and we were awarded that grant. So we received $10,000 to go towards our skate school and helping our all-access pass skaters be able to attend skate school for free. And so part of that tour, or excuse me, part of that that grant that we won, it included a tour, which is like Be the Change Tour, I think is what they're calling it. And so Ryan and his foundation are actually coming to the Bay, and we were lucky enough to have it correspond with Skate Art Music. So we're like, okay, let's just bundle it and have it on the same day. So he's going to come with his squad and check it out and teach skate school. So it should be a really fabulous opportunity for our kids.
All right. Now, as far as art is concerned, the festival will showcase 15 local photographers. How are those photographers selected?
Sure, yeah. So it's really interesting, actually. We have a digital art space in the Bay. It's pretty new, and there's a lot of different local organizations that come in and utilize that space. So specifically one of those organizations is Untold Migrant Stories, and it's through the Asian Community Center in town. And so we decided, you know, since they're always working in the collective at the Bay, it would be a great opportunity to show some of their work. So we have the majority of the artists we're featuring are from Untold Migrant Stories, and then we have a couple really fabulous photographers that contribute to our For Youth, By Youth arts and culture publication called Rabble Magazine. So that's kind of like where the majority of the photographers are from.
And how would you describe the live mural painting? Who's the artist for that?
So Eder Muniz, and he, I can't remember exactly, do you know where he's from?
Brazil.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know
there
that.
You go.
He's just brilliant though. And he's going to come, and we have a mini ramp outside of the Bay basically, and we decided to kind of give that whole space to him, so he's going to be giving that a little bit of a facelift, which
so
is good.
So he kind of gets a whole canvas there, and it's your
huge
ramp.
The backside.
That's amazing. How does Skate Art Music Festival fulfill the mission of the Bay?
So Skate Art Music, like I said, our whole mission at the Bay is to be a place where the misfits or the young people in our community can come, especially if they don't feel as though they have a place elsewhere. It's a safe place. It's an inclusive space. And so, like I said previously, this event's kind of just a celebration of that. And it really, really focuses on the diverse community we have at the Bay. And how that, you know, kind of comes together through the subcultures, music, skateboarding, and art. And like I said, I love the event because it encourages people in the community that maybe wouldn't usually come to the Bay to come to the Bay and experience it. Because once you get there and really see what we're doing and the people who, the young kids are so incredible, and I love having people from the community come and get to meet them.
And I guess we didn't really talk about music. What kind of music are you guys having at the festival?
Yeah, we have a showcase. It's I think primarily, if not completely, hip hop. And we did it a little bit differently this year. We had some hip hop artists that are very, like veterans of the local music scene. We reached out to them. We said, we want to give you ownership of this. We want you to tell us who you think should be a part of this festival. You have your finger on the pulse of the local scene. So they chose six artists to come, and like I said, primarily hip hop, and a lot of them are kind of like up and coming. And so I think that's really cool too. It's just a different mix than I think the Bay has done in the past. So,
all right, the Skate Art Music Festival, that is tomorrow in Lincoln at 2:30 p.m. at the Bay in Lincoln. My guests have been Matthew Ratliff and Lauren Ferris. It's great talking with both of you. Have a great time tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
If your boss just caught you listening online and you wish you could catch up with Friday Live a little bit later, you can. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org.
I'm Robert Goldberg. This is the NET Radio Fall Membership Drive. We'll return to Friday Live in just about a minute to hear about more music, theater, and art being created here in Nebraska. But I need to take a few seconds to remind you that this program happens thanks to support from listeners like you.
My name is Gabe Sainert, and I am from McCook, Nebraska. I love classical music. I began to listen to classical music on NET Radio because we had a show here at the Bierock. It was called Bach at the Bierock. And then also my friend is into classical music and piano, and she got me started on it. I like having Friday Life here at the Bierock because we can emphasize the events and everything that's going on here in Southwest Nebraska. I think it's important to have a statewide network like NET just to bring the entire state together with something that we can bond on, such as music.
Whether it's music, Friday Live, or other shows that you love, call or click to make a pledge. Show your love for the programs you love. The number is 800-290-6850. That's 800-290-6850. And the website is netnebraska.org.
authors of a book about Omaha eateries have discovered some interesting histories, like in the case of Katerina Malara, who started selling the thing she knew how to make to support her family.
She unfortunately was widowed at a very young age, early 30s, and she had four children to care for. So she looked for an opportunity to bring in some money, and so she started making some pasta and selling it out of the house. Well, eventually, she was told she couldn't do that anymore, and so she had to find somewhere to make it. And fortunately, the old Rotella's Bakery had a little spot open so she could actually sell her pasta out of a window.
Hear about a few of the places featured in a new book by Tim and Lisa Trudell in this week's Friday Live Extra. Download the podcast or listen online at netnebraska.org. The Nebraska Repertory Theater is currently presenting their production of The Legend of Georgia McBride. With us today are Chicago native Brandon Gallitz, whose past credits include Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, LaRond in Men Exposed, and Philip Crawford, who's a sophomore theater performance major at UNL. He has worked with theatrics before. You just heard a high five in the background there. This is his first role with Nebraska Repertory Theater. Good morning to both of you.
Morning. Morning.
Yeah, nice to meet you. The Legend of Georgia McBride, what's the play about?
It's essentially, it's a play about being proud of who you are. It's a play about discovery. Takes place in small town Panama City, Florida, in a little dive bar called Cleo's. One of our mains loses his job to unfortunate circumstances, and we get some new talent that gets brought in. So a little bit of mayhem ensues. Come check us out, and I'm not gonna blow it for you.
We don't want to give away too much of the surprise, right? About this new talent, I'm raising my eyebrows. Brandon, you have been to Nebraska before, or no? Is this your first time in Nebraska?
You know what? I've driven through Nebraska, but this is my first time in Lincoln.
Oh well, we're glad you stopped because that's
it's been an absolute pleasure being here.
Okay, wonderful. As an actor who travels, what's the experience like? Is it different working with the community of actors time and time again, as opposed to working with new actors all the time?
You know what? The best thing about, I think, the work is that you can constantly be inspired by the people that you work with and the community that you're in. I went to school. I'm from Chicago originally, but I went to school at University of Iowa. So I compare Lincoln to Iowa City. It's super, super similar. We're both Big Ten schools. We'll see you guys at the end of the month. But
gauntlet thrown.
But it's a special kind of community, the theater community and the entertainment community. The great thing about having the rep, especially in a college campus, is that you guys are super supportive and you guys have an immense amount of pride in who you are. So it's been an absolute pleasure working in Lincoln, and the talent out here is great. Phil's extraordinary. Definitely come check him out.
And Philip has his Nebraska sweater on today, so he's representing here. Yeah. Philip, can you tell us a little about yourself and how you got involved with Nebraska Rep, what year you are at UNL?
Well, I am a sophomore theater performance major at UNL with a minor in musical theater, and this is my first show I've actually been in at the Rep. I didn't even start theater until my senior year of high school.
Wow.
So this is my fourth ever play even. So I'm still very new to it, but it's been such an inviting atmosphere at the Rep, and they're so close with UNL and everything that it's really a great start to professional theater. And it helped me get my EMC card, which is the next step to getting my equity card one day.
Okay.
And it's really helping launch me into the field.
Yeah. For this particular show, how did each of you prepare for your roles?
You want to go ahead first?
Yeah. So I, in this show, play a drag queen, which I don't think that's too much of a spoiler, but I prepared by... I've seen a lot of drag queens and I've watched a lot of videos, and it was a lot of just figuring out who I wanted to be and how I wanted to present myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also been a lot of learning how to do drag queen makeup and get ready in 30 minutes to look like that. But other than that, it was just a lot of me trying to find the parts of me that I wouldn't normally let out and let those out through my drag queen.
Yeah, if people have watched any of the videos of like the Fab Five recently, one of them got all dressed up and it took quite some time. There's the covering of hair, there's layers and layers of makeup. So how long does it actually take you to get ready for the...
Well,
to get dressed for this?
We start the show in Florida casual, is what it's called.
Okay.
And then we have probably about 30 minutes to go downstairs, and we're all just rapidly putting on our makeup, putting on all of our padding and our dresses or our outfits.
Wow.
And so it's just a frantic 30 minutes where we're just going as fast as we can.
Mayhem ensues.
Yeah.
That's new meaning for Drag Race, I would say. That would be like brand new. Brandon, how about you for your role?
So one of the things that you learn as being a performer and an actor, whether film, television, commercial, or theater, is that you have to have the ability to multitask. You've got to be able to, you know, afford to do the job that you love while doing the job that you love. In being able to do it. So Eddie, who I'm playing in the show, is a small town bar owner over at a place called Cleo's. So for me, there's a little bit of background research of who you are, where you come from, you know, a little bit of creative research. Meisner is a, you know, a little bit of the background on that. You can research as you will on that. But what ends up happening, and again, having a phenomenal director like Steve Scott on it, is that you're always you, right? I'm always Brandon. Phil is always Phil. But the magic, I think, of the work is that eventually there becomes a merging that ensues, right? And so with Eddie, again, I've bartended, I think, since I was in Pampers, right? But I don't know if I can say that, but I guess I just did. We're live on the radio.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I've worked with a lot of different bar owners and a lot of different places. And you take from places that you've been, you take with people that you've worked with, and then you use your imagination. And so, Eddie, just kind of drop in. And, I mean, you know, sometimes you just kind of find the moment.
You're assuming the role right now. I see
That's it. That's it.
Well, it sounds certainly like an interesting show from Nebraska Repertory Theater. Dates running still. How many shows left? Because you guys started your run already.
Yeah, so we've been going.
We have 4 shows left, I believe. We have one tonight, 2 tomorrow, and then a matinee on Sunday.
Yeah, so tonight, so Friday night, we've got a 7:30 performance. Saturday, and it's an away game, so you guys are more than welcome to come and join us.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
State,
that's
sure.
A thing. That's a thing. Go Big Red. We've got a 2 p.m. tomorrow, and then also a 7:30 tomorrow, so 2 chances tomorrow.
Okay.
And then Sunday, we have another matinee at 2 p.m.
Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show this morning. I've been talking with Philip Crawford and Brandon Gallitz about their show, The Legend of Georgia McBride, with Nebraska Repertory Theater. Thanks so much for being here.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And you can link to more about this show on our website. Look for the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org. The Generator Concert Series at Kineco in Omaha presents a program called Wailing. Corbin Hirschhorn of KVNO tells us what's on the program.
Omaha Under the Radar has been at the forefront of the city's contemporary and experimental music scene for the last several years, but it has expanded beyond its regular summer schedule. Kineco has opened its facilities for regular events throughout the year, Soundry, a workshop for hobbyist musicians, and the Generator Concert Series, which returns tonight with Wailing. Omaha Under the Radar director Amanda DeBoer Bartlett.
Wailing, W-A-I-L-I-N-G and W-H-A-L-I-N-G. Wailing, obviously, for screaming sighs, all of the sounds that the voice makes related to, you know, the scary time of year, Halloween time. And also, we are programming The Voice of the Whale by George Crumb, and so wailing as in the large aquatic mammal.
George Crumb is a favorite composer of the company, and his composition works to create the spooky ambience of the season.
The theater of this piece, The Voice of the Whale, comes through not only in the visual elements, the masks and the blue lighting, but also in the sounds. There's a lot of what we call extended techniques playing inside the piano, and the flute and the cello are using some strange sounds that reflect the sound of whale song. And the score is visually stunning and spacious and complicated throughout the page. It's spread out in really unique ways. And so the visual elements and the sonic elements really combine to create for what many people is considered a spiritual experience or a very unique immersive experience.
Wailing will also feature the work of Helmut Lachenmann, another influential composer for voice in the 20th century.
The rest of the program includes a piece by Helmut Lachenmann, a German composer, called Thema. That's spelled lowercase T-E-M, capital A. Thema means theme, but if you take that capital A and put it at the beginning of the word, it means breath. So the piece relates to breath themes and sounds of the voice. It's one of the most iconic contemporary vocal pieces, and the way it's notated has become, for many people, the standard notation for extended vocal techniques. It uses screams and inward singing and grunts and snorts. The cellist and the flutist also make vocal sounds and speak in German. And Lachenmann is a very funny composer. There's a lot of humor in the piece. So while it's quote-unquote serious contemporary classical music, it's also quite humorous and absurd at the same time.
Deborah Bartlett has also composed work for this concert with a nautical theme.
And it's called A Beautiful Question, and it's from an NPR story about a marine biologist who has an encounter with a couple of whales. And it's a really great story. Apparently this whale was protecting the marine biologist from a shark. And when the marine biologist returned to that same place, the whale came and put her fin around the marine biologist like a hug. So it's the story about a marine biologist getting a whale hug. And it was just too cute to not put on a program with George Crumb.
The Generator Series, Wailing, at Kaneko is tonight, October 11th at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 when Soundry Workshop participants will perform their original horror-themed compositions. For more information or tickets, visit thekaneko.org. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirschhorn.
There's no place like NET Radio, and all across the state you can find out about music, theater, poetry, dance, and much more. I'm Robert Goldberg, and even though we aren't doing heavy fundraising this hour, we still need to hear from you. This is the last opportunity during Friday Live to call in or go online with your support during our fall drive.
My name is Alexios Anist. I'm a guitar player. I grew up on a farm near Baird. After high school, I began studying classical guitar, which opened my world to great composers like Beethoven, Mozart, Debussy, and Bach. After traveling the world playing music on cruise ships and studying flamenco guitar in Spain, I've settled back in the Midwest to teach, compose, and make as much music as possible. You may have heard some of my music on the NET Radio Arts Show Friday Live and the podcast Friday Live Extra. I'm so grateful to NET for supporting me, for using my music, and for supporting the arts. Whether you listen to this station for arts programming, local music, classical music, or news, NET relies on support of members to continue doing what they do.
Take just a few moments to be a part of the great team that makes this all happen. You don't even have to audition to be a part of the cast of listeners that support NET. Just call or go online. It takes just a few minutes at 800-290-6850 or go online to netnebraska.org. Don't put it off. Call right now, 800-290-6850. That's 800-290-6850 or donate at netnebraska.org. Thank you for supporting NET.
The Merriman Performing Arts Center in Kearney hosts several concerts and events this fall. Here to tell us about them is Executive Director Denise Christensen. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning.
Next Thursday, you're bringing the Led Zeppelin tribute band, Get the Lead Out, to town. Is this the first rock tribute band you guys have booked?
This is a pretty big, concert. And these guys have been touring, I think, since the early 2000s. And what's incredible about them, it's six musicians. So they are recreating the studio sound of Led Zeppelin. So it's even better than Led Zeppelin themselves in concert because you're hearing that great albums that you loved. And they have actually been at Red Rocks in Colorado, and they will be in Lincoln, and they're going down to Wichita. So we're excited to present them here in central Nebraska.
In that same spirit, there is an ensemble that's touring through a couple of places, Arapahoe, North Platte, and then Kearney, of course, at the Merriman Center there. That's a week from Saturday, the Nebraska Pride Chorus Concert with some quartets from Sweet Adeline's International. What can audience members expect to hear at this concert?
This is a wonderful opportunity to see fabulous local talent from central Nebraska here at the Merriman or at Arapahoe or in North Platte. And these ladies are so polished and bring such a wonderful concert of in the Sweet Adeline style of quartets and ensembles. And they have special guests of Boots and Cats, which is fun. So they just really mix it up. What a great time to be able to enjoy friends and neighbors and family members to bring to a wonderful regional, I guess I would call it, concert of Sweet Adeline's. A lovely concert for Saturday, October 19th here at the Merriman, or as you mentioned, at the Arapahoe High School at 2 p.m. on October 19th, and then in North Platte. So again, if you live in those areas, I'm sure there's more information available locally about how to get tickets and then the concert times.
Now, the Kearney Concert Association often collaborates. They have their concerts right there at the Merriman. They present Take 3 on Friday, October 25th. Who is that ensemble, and do you know what type of music they perform?
They are an incredible ensemble, a trio of violin, piano, and cello. And they do everything from Billy Joel to Beethoven. They are classically trained musicians, so they bring their take on this music. And so you'll hear everything from classical to contemporary. And we're very proud to be partnering with the Kearney Concert Association to bring classical music to this area. So if people are interested in tickets for that, they can visit the kearneyconcerts.org website. They do their ticketing separately from the Merriman, but we're always happy to guide people to where they can find the arts in central Nebraska.
Well, and then right after October, there's a couple more events, November 2nd and November 8th. Let's look at the November 2nd event. You're bringing in some local artists.
That's right. We're very proud to also be a visual arts center here in South Central Nebraska. And the Handmaidens have been doing this holiday market for, oh, I guess probably more than 20 years. And they are a very small group of artists who do incredible work, everything from pottery to fiber to metal to sculptures. And they moved their holiday market here to the Merriman last year, and it was an incredible success because we have a beautiful venue. It's easy parking. They have their holiday market here both on November 2nd, which is a Saturday, and then November 3rd.
November 8th, you've got the current editions of the Box Tops and the Buckinghams, two rock groups that started in the 60s. November 10th, the Kearney Concert Association is back with another concert with Nebraska Jazz Orchestra. And November 11th, the Offutt Brass, a six-member group from the U.S. Air Force Heartland of America Band, perform. Did you intentionally book a very busy extended weekend of music, Denise?
We love it. You know, we love it. Isn't that great? You can hear everything from, you know, great classic rock and roll from the 60s. I mean, the Box Tops had a string of hits like The Letter, Cry Like a Baby, Choo Choo Train, and more. The Buckinghams had phenomenal success with hits like Kind of a Drag, Back in Love Again, and the national anthem of teenage love, Hey Baby, They're Playing Our Song. So what great music from the 60s that you can enjoy. And then that's Friday, November 8th. Then on Sunday, November 10th, the Nebraska Jazz Orchestra based out of Lincoln is coming for the Kearney Concert Association series. So we got rock and roll, we got jazz. And then on Veterans Day, we have the Offutt Brass coming to Kearney. We are partnering with the Kearney Hub on this absolutely free concert for the Kearney area. It is the Offutt Brass is a 6-member brass of percussion, so it's a smaller ensemble, but wow, these are fabulous musicians, and of course, we're going to be celebrating our local vets and then just a great evening of music.
Lots going on. The Merriman Performing Arts Center in Kearney hosts several concerts this month and next month. Executive Director Denise Christensen, thanks for telling us about all of those events.
It was great to chat about it, and I hope people come and enjoy some time in Kearney from South Central Nebraska or even Lincoln and enjoy some of the concerts that we have available.
And for more information about the Merriman Center events or for more information about anything you hear about here on Friday Live, go to netnebraska.org/radio and look for the Friday Live page. I'm Genevieve Randall, and this is NET Radio's Friday Live. There are not one but two Lincoln Symphony Orchestra concerts this weekend, and we'll learn more about both in about just 5 minutes. Next, a new film at the Ross Media Arts Center has lots of laughter and political jabs delivered with a southern drawl and toasted with a bottle of beer. Joaquital Dreher has this review of the documentary about the life of Texas columnist Molly Ivins.
I'm a Texan. I drive a pickup truck. I drink beer. I hunt. I'm a liberal. So what?
Yeah, so what? Let's have fun, do good, raise some hell, dance with them what brung you. That's what Molly Ivins demanded. Directed by Janice Engel, Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins, documents the life of the late outspoken journalist, activist, and columnist, and author of her New York Times best-selling collection of essays, Molly Ivins Can't Say That, Can She? And Shrub, the short but happy political life of George W. Bush, and Bushwhacked, life in George W. Bush's America, and You Got to Dance with Them What Brung You, another collection of essays. There is no narrator to guide our thoughts in Raise Hell. We feast on her interviews and speeches and voices of her friends, family, and colleagues. She is a fellow Southerner with a booming Southern accent, a maverick and outsider, as she describes herself. Ingalls makes known that this 6-foot Texan carried the heart and soul of journalism into political moments, what with her witty and raucous insights, especially on the former President George W. Bush, whom she affectionately named Shrub.
I accidentally became an authority on George W. Bush, like the guy who climbed Everest. It was there.
Over the course of her career, Molly Ivins navigated the waters of journalism during the time when men dominated the papers. A fast-paced documentary, Ingalls backs up and allows Ivins to delve onto the landscape of Texas politics.
Texas has always been the national laboratory for bad government.
And later, the terrain of national politics.
We keep pretending that the political spectrum runs from right to left. It doesn't. It runs from top to bottom. It's not those people in Washington. It's not those people in your state capital. This country is run by us.
Political digs and insults aside, Raise Hell showcases a woman, a privileged Southern woman born into a staunch Republican family. Her political views tantalized her father, General Jim Ivins, the authoritative gas and oil executive, because, as one friend revealed, General Jim could control his family and those who worked for him, but he could not control his liberal-minded daughter. To add such insult to his Republican psyche, Molly dared to bring an African-American man to the Ivins home. And get this, General Jim arrived to find him swimming in the pool. This in the heat of America's civil unrest. Oh, yes, yes, she did that. Even the New York Times could not control her.
I had been asked to join the New York Times.
They wanted Molly for the unique voice, the iconoclast, but they wanted her to fit into the times. As we say in Texas, that dog don't hunt.
Through an objective lens, Ingalls brings to us a journalist who found her calling, and as did the late Nobel Prize winner Toni Morrison, Ivins realized words have power, and Ivins squeezed from them the juices of their influence. Her friends boasted that she could drink any man under the table, and drinking with the good old boys gave her power and access into circles closed off to women. But that power and access had a price, and Ivins dearly paid for it with bouts of alcoholism. Later, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, but she kept on living. She kept on talking until the last edition of her spark and wit. In 2007, Mary Tyler Molly Ivins passed away of breast cancer at the age of 62 in her beloved Austin, Texas. Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins, plays through October 17th at the Ross Media Arts Center in Lincoln. Also playing through October 17th is Loro, Paolo Sorrentino's look at the scandal-plagued Silvio Berlusconi. For Friday Live, I am Joaquita Dreher.
I'm Genevieve Randall. You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Lincoln Symphony Orchestra continues its season with two concerts this weekend. The first concert tonight is part of their classical series. The second on Sunday afternoon is part of their family series. And joining me now to talk about both of those concerts, music director Ed Polichick and executive director Barbara Zock. Good morning.
Good morning.
On this
great to see you.
Yes, great to
crisp.
See you.
Oh,
it is very
we're coming
crisp.
Into the maestro weather now. I love this cold weather. It's great. It's
well,
great.
This first concert is called Beethoven's Heroic Beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
What is on this program, Ed, and why?
Well, we are now in the fourth year of our Beethoven cycle, where we're performing all of the symphonies of Beethoven, the pairings of which started with 2 and 5. That I can't remember all of them all the way through. I think it was 4 and 7, 8 and 6. And now we're at the earlier part. So tonight we're going to be presenting Symphony number 1 and Symphony number 3.
Contrary to what you may have read in the paper saying that we're performing all 9 this evening.
well, we
have another concert to get to on Sunday.
A definite marathon for sure.
And of course, we're saving the choral symphony in 9th for next season, yes, in the fall. So we'll be, but it's all a bit of kind of preparing the orchestra, our community, and all for 2020, the big 250th celebration of Beethoven. So yeah, we're very excited about it. And I had a dress rehearsal last night on stage at the Lead Center. I cannot wait for this program. It is some of the greatest music, truly. Truly, and some of the most challenging to perform. It's just beautiful.
Well, and you know, 3 is amazing, and people talk about 3 a lot, but his very first symphony right off the bat, even though it's early, I always tell, you've heard me say this before, that I always tell people they should really do a deep dive and listen to 1 for weeks and then listen to 2 for weeks and go through all 9 and then come back to 1 again. Uh-huh. You can still hear that this is Beethoven, yep. Yeah, even though it's
unmistakable,
early.
You know.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And the interesting thing is, you know, it was at a time when his big hero was Papa Haydn. Franz Joseph Haydn was the one that, and he was dying to meet him and all, and of course we know that they finally did, and it was a disastrous meeting.
Yeah.
There's a tremendously strong, very strong classical influence in the early symphonies. But I love your idea, because it does. 1 leads to 2. 2 leads to this incredible, mm-hmm, symphony number 3, the Eroica, that was unlike any other symphony that had written up to that point in time in terms of scope. 3 horns. Who ever used 3 horns in a symphony? And whoever wrote a symphony that was greater than 20, 25 minutes, and he doubled that,
yeah,
you know. It's magnificent. It really is. And with every symphony, you can see the progress and where he's heading. And of course, that each one presents its challenges, unlike the symphony before it. You know, it's brilliant. It's just brilliant.
And after tonight, so you'll have checked 1 and 3 off the, mm-hmm, checklist.
Mm-hmm.
How many left
One.
Just one symphony left.
Just the ninth symphony. And that will be next season.
Okay.
Next fall, probably right around this time.
Right around this time.
Now, the Madcap Puppets join the orchestra for a family concert on Sunday. What will the orchestra be playing, and what will the puppets be doing while the orchestra is playing?
First of all, we're so sorry. We have a puppeteer in town today, but she's at an elementary school right now talking to about 200 kids. So she couldn't join us on the radio. They're doing the Pulcinella Suite. And this is a piece that they did with the Cincinnati Chamber Orchestra, and they kind of put it together with them, and they said, we'd love to bring this to Lincoln because they know, they've grown to know and love our Lincoln audiences over the past, you know, decade or so.
And vice versa. Our audiences, our orchestra, just adore working with and seeing the Madcap Puppets. We're very excited about it. It's been a spectacular week, and when we go from Beethoven to Stravinsky
Pulcinella. And Pulcinella is a clown, we should say.
Right.
Yes.
This is a kind of fun piece.
It's very fun. There's no speaking during the piece. Ah. And so one of the puppeteers will give a little introduction, and then the piece is, you'll just hear the music and watch the puppeteers. I think it's a little bit more dance-oriented than some of their other shows. The puppets look very different than some of their other ones. I think it'll be a very fun and interesting experience for
our audience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're really looking forward to it.
And at these family concerts, even leading up to the music, there are family activities and interactive things the kids can do. And this is something you guys have done time and again.
We literally want kids to walk away. They might not remember exactly what they heard, but 10 years later, 15 years later, I want them to just say, oh, I remember having such a great time at the symphony. And so we have face painting and an instrument petting zoo and craft activities and games. So if you come starting 1 hour beforehand, there'll be bubbles, giant bubbles outside.
It's great. It's great.
So everything that kids could want to do, and then come in and hear the music.
Let me say also, I want to add something, because, you know, with this orchestra, we have so many highly talented top drawer people that play in this orchestra, and one of those people is Richard Fountain. He's our keyboard player, and we've featured him in the past. Mm-hmm. He's also going to be featured on this program just before the Pulcinella with the great Capriccio Brillant of Mendelssohn, which is one of these kicks of a piece. It really is, because the hands and the fingers become a blur, and I just know that the families are going to just love this.
And I think it's great, great, great for kids, because piano is the instrument that children probably play the most.
Gravitate toward,
and you
toward,
don't always get to see that on stage with an orchestra, especially at a family concert.
Right.
And so we just want to give kids a little inspiration, and for kids who play the piano, something to feel like they can relate to.
Absolutely. Now, what's the next concert after these two concerts? Who are your soloists, and what's on that program coming up?
This is a bit of a darker program that we program. We're extremely, again, one of our most talented musicians, Greg Helseth, is our principal horn, and we're pairing him with a wonderful tenor, Taylor Stanton, with the Britten Serenade. Very challenging.
Our audiences will recognize Taylor. He was Nemorino
last season
with Opera Omaha.
Okay.
This is going to be my first time working with him.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very excited, because I only know him via YouTube, via the internet. But
so you get to see him for real at the next one.
He's incredible. I mean, it's a fantastic voice. And bookending that particular piece, we're going to open with Brahms' Tragic Overture, which is a piece that I've never done here. I'm really excited. And then we're going to close the program with the third symphony of Brahms, which is not the symphony that you hear as often as 1, 2, and 4. But beautiful.
Just
so it ought to be a kind of a very unique listening journey for the audience.
But this weekend, though, it's Beethoven and Stravinsky.
Yep.
Lincoln Symphony Orchestra continues its season with two concerts. The first one is tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Lead Center in Lincoln. That is the Beethoven. There is a pre-concert chat at 6:45, so Ed, I will see you.
You sure will, with bells on.
Just a few hours.
Yeah, just a few hours. The second concert is Sunday at 2 p.m. at O'Donnell Auditorium on the campus of Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln, and the Family Festival portion of that starts an hour before, so 1 o'clock. Music Director Ed Palachik and Executive Director Barbara Zock, thanks for telling us about the concerts.
Thanks
to be here.
So much.
Thanks for listening to Friday Live. Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black with a best of classics by request here during our fun drive. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of our show. That is at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks. to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Brandon Thomas, Robert Goldberg, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from the Sunday Farmers Market at College View, where the focus is local food, farmers, and community. Offering all local produce and farm products and accepting SNAP, credit, and debit cards. Located at 48th and Prescott. Open Sundays in October from 10 to 2. And Lincoln Association for Traditional Arts, or LAFTA, presenting Kansas Natives, the Vote Sisters, tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the 7th Street Loft in Lincoln. For tickets, LAFTA.net.